Hey, doesn't USC do a bit called What's for Dinner?
Yes, they
yes.
do.
Let's start this one with our good friend Matt DeMarinis as we welcome him in live from Detroit ahead of the Sweet 16 game tomorrow from White Blue Review. What is Matt eating in Detroit? Do you like that segment? Would you like to walk us through what you consumed yesterday in the state of Michigan?
I had Harry's Detroit for dinner. I guess that was kind of like a little dive bar next to the Little Caesars Arena.
Okay.
Little Caesars Arena. There's a lot of Little Caesars places around Detroit.
I can imagine.
Yeah, and what did I have for lunch? I had some chicken place, some fried chicken. That was pretty good. I can't remember the name of it now, dang it.
Have you been?
My friends were all hit.
Okay, go ahead.
Friends were all hitting me up to go to Mom's Spaghetti, so.
Oh, yes.
Try Mom's Spaghetti eventually, so.
Now, you going to go to Hockey Town, the bar right there outside of Comerica Park?
Yeah, I didn't check that out. A lot of sports bars, they have weird hours. They were, closed a lot yesterday, so I didn't really go into a lot of places. But Detroit's got kind of a fun little vibe to it, you know. I like it better than Pittsburgh. You know, it just feels like feels like there's a lot to do, a lot of fun. Like, it just feels like a good energy, you know.
Now, will you be consuming a hot dog? Because all of a sudden, Detroit's become known for their hot dogs. Like, American Coney Island is one of the most famous locations in downtown Detroit.
Yeah, it's on my list. I obviously have a lot to do, but it's on my list of things to try because I didn't know that there was this dueling Coney Island hot dog rivalry going on, but they're right next to each other. So
yes.
I'm going to have to kind of weigh in on that and see if I can spark a riot or two.
Yeah, so there's American, and then right next door is Lafayette.
Oh.
Yeah. And American has a historical landmark too, right?
Yes.
That's a longer running one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
See, I didn't know any of this. So you're.
I enjoy a good rivalry. So I'm happy to get out on that.
Hey, sure. Judging by what I see you do on Twitter, yes, you do.
You just said something that I don't know if anybody would have ever said in the last 10 years. That I know Gary's more partial to Pittsburgh because he spent some time there. But you said that Detroit you like better than Pittsburgh. And did I hear you correctly? You said there's just a good energy in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, everybody I've run into, they have, I enjoy the personalities.
Okay.
And Pittsburgh seems really grumpy for some reason.
It's a grumpy city.
The Penguin season is not good right now.
And honestly, the city, Detroit feels more like Omaha. So maybe it's
he also got Russell Wilson there, too.
But Detroit or Pittsburgh has the city is built on just a hill, essentially, and the roads are weird. They're all kind of intertwined, and I don't even know if I saw a single street light. They're just kind of your turn, my turn kind of thing.
Yeah.
Detroit feels more like a normal 21st century downtown metropolis. So I'm enjoying Detroit more than
that's
so far.
That
people
is,
said I wouldn't enjoy Detroit, Matt. So far, I've just
good.
Yeah, what you're saying in the comparison is all true. Between Detroit and Pittsburgh. Why did Creighton win late Saturday night into early Sunday morning?
What I keep going back to throughout the week is I just think they might be one of the most conditioned teams in the country. I really do. I know people don't associate Creighton with the physical because they don't have a bunch of guys touching the top of the backboard and they aren't the strongest looking dudes in the world, but they can get up and down, mm-hmm. And I just think they came out for that second overtime like it was the first day of the season against a team they knew they were going to beat by 30 plus. Steven Ashworth was looking at someone in the crowd laughing and winking. Mac had a smile on his face. Trey and Baylor were joking around. Kalkbrenner was just had them joking with Mac. They looked so loose, and I'm just like, do they know their season could end in 5 minutes? It just kind of hit me. Look how I just couldn't believe how loose they were, and it's almost like they knew something, And I think what they knew was that they're built for minute 45 plus, and Oregon wasn't. And that's kind of how it played out. I just think they knew that they were built for this moment because they've done it before throughout the season, and they didn't feel tired. They felt like they could go even longer if it needed to. So I think that's an intangible thing. I don't think that's something that's necessarily statistically something you can put your finger on and say, from an analytical standpoint. I just think it was a mindset thing that they're well conditioned, and that even in the moments where the game got really hard and really tense, they stayed loose and they executed.
Kind of with that, Matt, you mentioned Steven Ashworth. I remember talking with Connor at halftime. We saw the amount of looks that were open, and Creighton just simply wasn't hitting shots. Steven Ashworth especially was getting some wide open looks. And yet, I don't know if you sense this at all. I don't think the team sensed it at all. I think people that maybe have never watched Creighton maybe would have been concerned that you're just having a bad shooting night and those aren't going to fall, and that spells trouble for Creighton. Are we at that point with this team that you see something like that in the first half, and whether we're talking about Steven Ashworth or Trey or even Baylor Shireman, heck, you can even throw in a Farabella or Mason Miller, that those guys have now built up enough equity that if it's not there maybe in the first 10 minutes, don't sleep on them, because they're probably going to have that ability at the end, especially with what Steven Ashworth was able to do there towards in overtime and towards the end of regulation?
I would certainly hope so. The body of work is just, it's there. If people want to – people, I don't know, it's easy to kind of – whatever your narrative is, and you can kind of build it on – you can kind of nitpick and build it on out of convenience at this point. I think that's what I've noticed about a lot of arguments these days in all kind of realms, honestly. Mm-hmm. I just think – and honestly, from a player standpoint, they don't – that's the reason their confidence doesn't ever waver is – they trust how many reps have gone into what we see on the floor for 40 minutes plus. So, what we're seeing in a 10 to 15 shot sample size, there's 1,000 plus, hours of work that has gone into that. So, that's why you hear coaches talk about process a lot. And, if sometimes it's, they're just saying it, but I think with Creighton, you kind of have to understand that that's actually true at this point. And with Steven too, it's, I couldn't believe looking at the box score that he missed 10 threes, because it felt like every single clutch one he needed to hit, he knocked down, and I think that's the thing with him too, is when you look at the later the game goes, I don't know if it has to do with the condition he's in versus the guy guarding him or whatnot, or if it's just, his luck, late versus luck early. But man, he's super clutch, and it's hard to believe that he shot 33% from three and missed 10 of them. Because it felt like every big one he needed to get, he got. And I mean, late in the first half, when they were down six late in regulation, he had the big one to start off overtime, so he missed the wide open one on the first possession, the second overtime. Just feels like every big shot he needs to knock down, he does. And same with Baylor Shireman. He can drive in the lane and leave two or three short, but when the game's on the line, it's all splash, I think at this point you have to just trust the work these guys have put in. It's not always going to go in. Sometimes, you might find yourself at the end of the game and they miss a shot, but they won't miss the shot because they weren't prepared to hit it.
Matt DeMarinis from White and Blue Review joining us. And by the way, the pregame primer, which is a must read, Tom Nimitz does a great job with that. Already up for the Tennessee game tomorrow night. All the great content on whiteandbluereview.com. Are you in the category, because you look at these teams, and every team is a good team that gets to this weekend, and both of these teams have a strong 1-4 that have won accolades from the respective conferences. So I hear in postgame press conferences, players being interviewed say March is for players. Are you in agreement with that, or is March for coaches like Greg McDermott a whiz with a whiteboard against Rick Barnes?
First of all, we got to shout out Tom because he's the GOAT. I'm just the loudmouth of White for Review. I just want to go back to that real quick.
Nonsense.
To your question, though, Greg McDermott was in his bag against Oregon for sure. Every time they came out of the timeout, they were like, they executed to a almost flawlessly and got the shot to go. So, yeah, for sure. But I think I've always believed that March is about players more so than coaches. Now, I don't think coaches have no factor in it. I think, you know, you have to. There's so much that goes into preparation, what you're running, what matchups you're identifying, what you're attacking, how you're executing. That is dependent on, you know, the days leading up to it. That's more on the coaches. But the games themselves, the actual moments themselves, I think March is about moments and players. And if players can meet the moment, that's when you advance deep into March. And when players, you know, when the moment wins out, that's when you go home. So I'm more of a players get you deep into a tournament as opposed to anything else. I just think it goes, you know, when we look at, you know, the deepest runs that have always caught us off guard, it's always off some guy being on a stupid heater. Same with hockey, too. Like hockey, you know, if a goalie's on standing on his head, like that can get you all the way to the cup, you know. So I think these moments are always about players, in my opinion. I think they control more of their fate than anything else.
What about this matchup would be more concerning given the way Creighton plays? The offensive ability of Dalton Connect or the defensive ability of a Zakai Ziegler?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if I've figured out the answer to that because I watched both and I'm like, geez, Dalton's really good. Yeah. And then I watched Ziegler on defense and I'm like, man, he's so quick. You know, he disrupts so much. He contests shots. Like, he's just all over the floor, you know. You think he's guarding his guy, and then all of a sudden you're trying to make a pass in the paint, and he's right there picking it off. That's a really good question. I don't know if I figured out the factor yet. Like, to me, I think one of the biggest parts of this is that, you know, Tennessee's defense is really, really good in the half court. Transition-wise, they're not. Like, they're one of the worst teams probably still alive at this point. They might be the worst team still alive at this point, but they're one of the worst teams in the country in transition defense. So, and I think it's because, you know, one of the factors is probably, you know, the way Jonas Adu and, you know, Josiah Jordan James crash the offensive glass, like that obviously leaves them a little bit compromised in terms of numbers back. But when I look at maybe a thing or a factor in this game that could flip it in Creighton's direction, especially when you look at, you know, what they might be able to get offensively. I mean, you're talking about one of the best teams in transition offense versus one of the worst teams in transition defense. So if Creighton can, you know, rebound the ball, which is going to be hard, and they certainly got killed against Oregon, like on those crackbacks when Kalkbrenner had to, you know, go contest a shot. You know, Dalton Connect's going to get downhill. Zakai Ziegler's going to get downhill. You know, Josiah Jordan James is going to get downhill. You know, all those guys are going to attack. So if Kalkbrenner has to, you know, just abandon Adu or abandon one side of the floor and be a rim protector exclusively, it's going to be really hard for Creighton to get defensive rebounds, but they're going to have to figure out a way because attacking Tennessee in transition is, at least on paper, based on the body of work for both teams, is Creighton's probably the easiest way to get comfortable offensively.
Does this seem like if both teams didn't shoot very well in their last game, I mean, Tennessee was, I mean, fortunately their defense took over when they're 3 of 25 from beyond the arc, Matt. Texas shoots, 36%. They turn the ball over 17 times, and Tennessee survives. And Creighton didn't shoot it well until that second overtime, and they survived, and they moved on. But I'm looking at how both of these teams attacked offensively, and they've got some great, great shot makers. And it's not just Connect and Shireman. But it seems like the formula in this game doesn't match up for Tennessee if it turns into Creighton shoots and makes a lot of threes, and it turns into a 3-versus-2 game where Tennessee isn't great shooting the three ball, and they're not exceptionally good defending the arc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think the more you get into a firefight, the more it probably is advantage Creighton because of the different ways they can score. I mean, they have so many threats. Like, you know, Baylor and Trey can get to the rim on their own. Steven is really good in the ball screen with Kalkbrenner and finding, you know, lanes to score. Obviously, Kalkbrenner is a threat, you know, one of the biggest threats at the rim. And then you have everybody on the perimeter that's been knocking down shots for Creighton with Mason Miller, Francisco Farabello into the mix with the rest of the guys. So you wouldn't necessarily think that if it gets into slugfest territory that Tennessee has an upper hand. But, in breaking down just what they've done offensively, like they do have firepower where if they can get a couple guys going outside of Ziegler and connect, like it could, they could get comfortable and they could be okay holding up against Creighton in a punch-for-punch kind of offensive slugfest. Jordan Ganey's a guy who does not shoot well from three, especially in his last 10 games. He hasn't shot it well, but, you know, he does have 9 games where he's hit multiple threes. So he's kind of streaky. Josiah Jordan James is a guy who, you know, he has 10 multi-three games this year. Santiago Vescovi, like, he's a guy that, you know, hasn't shot it well lately, but is capable of knocking down shots if you leave him open and he gets into a rhythm. So although the body of work would lead you to believe that Connect and Ziegler are kind of the head of the spear in terms of their offensive firepower, if those guys aren't on, they're in trouble. The other guys have been capable, so you kind of have to plan for it. You can't just sit there and be shocked. But yeah, to your point, like if this thing gets up and down, Creighton has more trustworthy weapons for sure.
All right, we'll get chatter on this. What happens tomorrow night, in your opinion?
Good question, man. 10 o'clock Eastern time tip. The Oregon game was crazy, too, because it just didn't have great, like, flow or shot making. And, you know, it just felt like a grind. And, you know, sitting around all day is probably the worst thing an athlete can do because they just want to, when they've prepared all week and then they hit the city, you know, they're just, it's like a business trip. They just want to lace it up and go. So sitting around all day, they're going to be the last game of the Sweet 16 round that tips off. So I guess whoever kind of just manages that better will have the upper hand. How does it go tomorrow? I feel like Creighton has more ways to win than Tennessee does. But Tennessee has high-level studs. Like, if Ziegler and Connect are both going and Adu is kind of holding his own with Kalkwinner, because he's no slouch. Like, he's a double-double machine. He crashes the offensive glass. He protects the rim really well at 6'11", 240. Tennessee has plenty of ways they can win this game and make Creighton uncomfortable. I think Creighton has more ways to win, even though they're the underdog in this matchup. I think the one thing that Tennessee has is that they've played a lot of NCAA tournament teams this year, so they're not going to kind of have to feel their way into this one. They've played a lot of high-level games already, and they've played some slugfests, they've played some grinders. You know, they can kind of win in any kind of way. But I think Creighton has the upper hand in terms of just when you break down personnel versus personnel versus personnel up and down the line, I kind of favor Creighton.
Good stuff.
I'm a homer, so who knows?
Good stuff. Hey, I'm glad back-to-back weeks we get you on the ground in Pittsburgh and Detroit covering it, and look forward to all of it. As always, appreciate your time. Thanks, Matt.
Let's make it 3 for 3. See you in Phoenix.
Yeah.
All right.
That's Matt DeMarinis, White and Blue Review, whiteandbluereview.com. Tom Nemitz has got the pregame primer before every Creighton game. It's
really good.
It's a must read. Two things quickly here on this game that I'm going to watch. So Ziegler is the defensive player of the year in the SEC.
Yep.
He's 5'9".
Yep.
But I'm going to look at him on the offensive side. He does a very good job of getting downhill. He's also somebody who's a facilitator. He averages 6 assists a game. So the matchup inside of the matchup against Ashworth. Here's the other thing for Tennessee that I worry about. So Creighton, as we've talked all week, we talked to Murph the other day, they don't foul. They only average 11 fouls a game. Well, Tennessee, 20% of their points come at the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not going to the free throw line, like Oregon,
yep.
Where are you going to make that up?
It's a great call.
I mean, that's 20% of your offense comes at the free throw line. Creighton doesn't put people at the free throw line. I don't have it in front of me. I think Creighton gives up like 10 free throw attempts a game.
Mm-hmm.
So where's that? Does that mean Connect has to go for 25 plus? Where he's done that 11 times this year. Those are two things that I'm going to closely watch as the game unfolds tomorrow night in Detroit.
Yeah, I'll add this with the defensive matchup between what Tennessee brings defensively and Creighton. And Matt kind of alluded to this, but thinking about this matchup, the way that they defend, but the way that Creighton has their ball movement, and the ball seldom stalls when Creighton has it going. They have their spacing, and it's second nature to them. Constantly with that ball movement, I think that is going to put maybe a matchup to Tennessee that they haven't seen too regularly, that I think that's where you start to open up shots. So if I'm seeing that in the first half where Tennessee's able to defend at least to a consistent level. How are they able to keep up in the second half, too, if Creighton continues to stick with really solid ball movement where that ball is not stalling at all? And then the other thing on the Creighton side of it, too, when we've seen them struggle, and this is where the Tennessee defensive factor does come in and Ziegler comes in, if they are getting – and this is where the spacing comes in, too. They start losing a little bit of that spacing, but they start getting careless with the basketball, because then I start thinking about what they can do, what Tennessee can do offensively in transition. We talk a lot about what Creighton can do in transition, too, but it's Tennessee creating those turnovers, and we've seen Creighton, even in the wins in the NCAA tournament in those first half, it didn't come back to bite them yet, but they were very careless with the basketball in the first two halves of the first two games of the NCAA tournament. That happens against Tennessee. That's a problem there.
Yeah, Tennessee's on-ball pressure is pretty ridiculous, and Creighton has struggled at times. All right, that game's tomorrow night, 9:00 for Creighton and Tennessee after Purdue and Gonzaga get done. All right, Stephen M. Sipple is going to join us next. Plus, I'm going to tell you a cool announcement for our building that involves Nebraska football.
Hey?
The home of Nebraska Athletics.
Mornings with Sharp and Rule coming this fall.
Whoa.
Sorry, Nick, you're out. 827. Sip joins us next on 1620 The Zone.